May we all, Mercury retrograde, find, you know, sweet collaborative remedies for any past bitterness about some other road tour that might have not gone so well. So anyway, not with you, with somebody else. So we go, yes, like we replace, we find and replace. There we go. So that's really fun. So excellent, team. Well, welcome, everybody. We have a feast of things to gather. So what are the qualities we most want to cultivate, you know, to navigate best now? And, you know, and how do we avail ourselves of all of the Uranus Taurus, the plant and the mineral and the animal and the talismanic, you know, support for those things? So that's really great. So as we go, think of, you know, as, you know, we will weave. We have a wonderful music that Richard found as our intro from Rising in Appalachia, a wonderful group that we keep meaning to tour together. And that will be perfect in a moment. And then as we go, as we saunter through the evening, remember, you can always email, and Richard will direct my gaze. And you can also chime in with a question or a conundrum or a blessing or by *7 will liberate your voice. And then *6 will mute you again. But as we go with the words, you know, the words are also tinctures. Just, you know, you might take notes or little mental notes of things we're going to put in our, you know, in our brew, so that at the very end we can, you know, toast and do a little jig on our way out. And I like from last week Delia Carroll's contribution to our phaser settings, sudden desire to begin anew with good intention. We go, yes. That's a really good one for our new moon in Aquarius, right behind us. So let's set forth with the splendid song that Richard found from Rising Appalachia.
And begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the life, forming in numbers and might. Keep the truth close to medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hand. Find your teachers in the voice of the forest, unplug, you can't ignore this, wisdom of the voiceless. Remedies are bound to fall and surround us, from the garden to the farthest, prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you, what do you belong to? I doubt there's the setting of the sun. Give thanks to each and every one. The lesson is the medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hand. Thank you.
with an extending my trap strip back into the messages and action. The art is feeding, stop talk to disbelieving, cause the garden holds the shards, the medicine is in the seedling. We hold tight to our rights to protect them. We know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the bear clan. We hold tight to our rights to protect them. We know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the
medicine woman. Medicine man, walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man, walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hand.
Off we go. Medicine woman, medicine man, that's really good. Mars is in Taurus right now in the eighth house of ancestral download. So that's very real. And we go right and walking with grace and all of those good things. So, Micah, we can go many places. And, of course, you want to go, feel free at any point. But we go... It's come up in a number of sessions lately in which I go, you know, it's all been very well and witty talking about different people in your life as, you know, the monster-in-law, the whatever. It's like, that's good. But now, really, for all of us, we want to compost all spite, because that's what the Mars Taurus or the Moon Aries hero or heroine does. So, would we, to release all spite or prickliness in ourselves, would we start with something prickly, Micah?
We could start with something prickly and sort of invoke that to be used in appropriate ways, right? Because
yes.
We don't want spite, but we do need to still, you know, there are still some people you need to fend off with compassion and without hatred, and, you know, may
yes.
they go with grace, but may they go. Yeah, so we could start with something prickly. We were talking earlier today, backstage,
mm-hmm.
About right. Devil's Club, and I know that's one that you always really like to work with. And that's a really good one. It's a Northwestern plant, Opelopanax, Devil's Club, and it grows up here, and it is really, really spiny. When you say spiny plant, that's always the first one that I think of. And it's a ginseng relative, so it's an excellent tonic. But it's used in the Northwest as a tonic, but it's also a very sacred plant, particularly with the Haida. And a lot of its uses are related to its spines and its spiny sort of signature, and it's considered protective. So it's used to protect you from witchcraft or attack or negativity, and also protect you while you're doing that work, too. And one of the Haida traditions around Devil's Club is to take the very spiny stems that it has and to actually weave a hut around the shaman or the medicine man as he's working. And then he has to find a way out of that magically. So he has to find a way between the spines where he doesn't get hurt himself. So kind of using that to protect himself, but also working its way through it too. And Devil's Club, one of the other reasons I really like it, because it is so apparently such a spiny plant. And if you've ever, you know, tried to wildcraft it, oh boy, it's an experience. It's really a tough plant. And so it seems very prickly and defensive and unfriendly and all these kinds of things. But it's a keystone species in the Northwest in a trinity between the bear and the salmon and the Devil's Club.
Oh.
And so even though it seems very prickly and very unfriendly, it's actually something that holds our ecosystem together in a very, very real way. And if we look back, a lot of the Northwest tribes from here were able to sustain huge villages that otherwise in history have never been seen without farming. But because of the salmon, they could be hunter-gatherers and have these huge villages. And that's a really, you know, important cornerstone of that. And how that would work is that the bears, they eat salmon. They love it. They poop the salmon out deep in the forest. And while they're in the forest, they gorge themselves on devil's club berries and then poop them out too with the kind of inbuilt fish fertilizer. The devil's club spreads, and then the devil's club shades the forest stream that the salmon needs to be cool and shady. And so I think it's a really beautiful weaving together of how something can seem very defensive and prickly and unfriendly, and yet it's making a safe space for all of the rest of the creatures in the forest.
That's wonderful. So as we go along, so it's like I'm making a note to put that in my magic backpack for our toasting at the end, Devil's Club, really good. And then, you know, with Mars in Taurus, which the whole chart right now is shaped like a crescent, right? So it's shaped like something that we would imbibe. It's a crescent shape, and it's from Mars. Everything in the West, in, from where I am outside D.C., Mars, planets, Pluto, they're trined, right? So everything contained between Mars and Taurus, participatory animism, yay, trine Pluto, deep roots, transformative things. And Mars's image, it's a divinatory image. It's a finger pointing to a line in an open book. So as I was gathering all the tinctures that I've gleaned from Micah over the years, it's like my favorite, you know, thing for when I've misplaced something. What I'm looking for is right in front of me. What I'm looking, oh, it is. Oh, there we go. And I realized that, you know, because some of these were hidden bottles, but because of our touring, I've dusted them all off, and it's like, oh, we have so much in our homes, more than we think, and it's like, ooh. So a finger pointing to a line in an open book. Everything is speaking to us, you know, the letter, the book that falls off the bookshelf, all those things. And then we had spoken of Mars and Taurus, you know, to wed into all community, human especially, because our species is so rogue, you know, but protecting Taurus beauty. So we spoke about.
And that actually connects really well to the Pluto idea, too. I was thinking about that a little bit more after we spoke earlier. So the plant that I'm thinking of for this is Calliandra is its Latin name. It's also called hummingbird plant or bottle brush tree. Anyone who's been anywhere warm enough has probably seen this. If you imagine a bright red shimmering bottle brush and just like thousands of them on a bush, that's what this plant looks like. It's gorgeous. And it grows in South America and Central America, too. And in the Aztec mythology, there's a classic warrior, and he's defending his people, and he's slain. And when he dies, he turns into a hummingbird. And so from then on, this warrior spirit will lead other killed warriors to the spirit world, where they feed off of the Calliandra, the nectar of this beautiful plant, and turn into hummingbirds. And they're doing this to transform that energy of war and aggression and fighting into beauty. And so that's that kind of that Pluto thing too, right? They're going to the underworld to transform something and bring it back differently. And they return to Earth after they do a period of time of this, a certain number of solar cycles. They return to Earth as hummingbirds. And that now that they're back on Earth as hummingbirds, they can fight for good and they can restore light to the world as, you know, through that iridescent beauty that they have. And so that's another one that's very much about the right use of power and the right use of Mars defending Venus. You know, those two characters are always tied together in myth. They're almost always a couple, Mars and Venus. And so it's, you know, Mars defending Venus, strength defending beauty, that combination in that Calliandra plant.
So, and Pluto is sometimes called the higher octave or, excuse me, or maybe lower octave of Mars in this case,
So that's right. In the old system, before there were the outer planets, they kind of, yeah, each planet had, some of them had a dual nature. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And so it's got a kind of Scorpio Mars thing. So we have two Marses really, which is the woofy outward and then the deep delving, and they're in collaborative cahooting. And we also have the two Venuses. We have Mars in Taurus. Taurus is the sensual nature Venus that you are so animating for us. And then our rising sign, and Uranus is at 7 plus Taurus, and our rising sign is 7 plus Libra, which is the social Venus. So we have the nature Venus and the social Venus. And this whole years framed by, you know, Taurus, Aquarius dynamic. We have the first Uranus and Taurus Saturn square right now. Uranus is at 7 degrees Taurus, Saturn at 7 Aquarius, ascendant 7 Libra, 777. So it's that theme of, right, exactly what Micah's so dedicated to, you know, the weaving.
And 7 is Venus also, that's her number.
Oh, right. And so it's weaving from, you know, the natural world to the human cultural world, and maybe not just the human cultural world, but the nature world to the social, let's call it social. So the deep animism and the social Venus are both present. And so Uranus is disrupting outworn imagery of self and others. It's a kind of lightning to strike, because some of the Sabian symbols I don't know, you know. The symbol for Saturn is mannequins in a store window, and we go, okay, apparently Uranus is going to hurl some liberating lightning at that, going, come alive, you mannequins, and you know, head out. But Uranus is, its image is a sleigh without snow, foreshadowing cutting new ground. I think it's a reference to what we're heading into. And there's no fire in our chart. Brr. So I don't know. Is anybody not cold? I'm lucky on the East Coast. It's only like in the 20s, right? So that's lucky. Other people have really, it's intense.
Well, it's not bad here. It's only about 40 here. So yeah. It's not
but
bad here.
Portland got a foot of snow.
They did, but on the coast it's just rainy and windy.
Right.
Which is par for the course right now. So yeah, there
is no fire. There is no fire. So we want to honor all these earth qualities too, but also maybe some. that's great. Protecting beauty, the hummingbird plant, or the bottle brush plant. Also
the bottle brush. Yeah. So beautiful. It's such a beautiful plant.
But
and you bringing up the nature Venus and the social Venus actually makes me think of another plant, Shatavari. And that's an Ayurvedic herb. It's an asparagus root, and it's used as a women's tonic. Shatavari actually means she with 100 husbands, because the idea is that if you took it every day, you could keep up with 100 husbands if that's your choice. But Shatavari also relates to ideas of Mother Nature and connecting with nature and connecting with the great mother energy, very nurturing sort of energy to it. And it is a bit of an aphrodisiac for couples. It's not like Damiana, which will just fire you up no matter what's going on. Shatavari is a strong aphrodisiac, and it's definitely an herb of love and connection and devotion. But it's also a very strong herb for connecting with nature, too. It's one of my favorites for taking to go out into the woods. And I find it really reliably induces that blood pressure, blood flow change that you see when your vision goes all soft, when you're out in nature, forest vision, I call it. Stephen Buhner talks about it in some of his books. And it relaxes your system and sharpens it in a way that creates a very beautiful vision of greenness and of nature. And I find that whenever I take it, and it's not a visionary herb in any of the chemical senses of the word, but for me, it is a very visionary herb in the forest for wildcrafting or finding plants or connecting with nature. And then, like I said, it does have that social, sexual component to it as well.
And how do you spell it?
Shatavari is Shatavari.
Okay.
And it's the root of an asparagus. It's an asparagus root.
Huh.
So it's a kidney tonic too, the way that asparagus also is. And it's just it's a really lovely, nurturing, very green, soft. Like if I were going to have an image for Shatavari, it would be like a really soft mound of moss. It's like that kind of plant. It's very soft and green and lovely.
I'm definitely putting that in my libation pouch. And also it's so fun because I have the chart, of course, here, and those who want to have it in front of them as well. And so as you're speaking, it's like different parts of the chart are like, you called. So we have Mars in Taurus at a beautiful 60 degree collaborative opportunity angle sextile to Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. So when you were speaking about Shatavari, going right, the vision, you know, out into nature, Mars Taurus gives one a vision and a feeling of belonging and intimacy and belonging and therefore stewarding and protecting, reciprocal blessing, you know, is a strong Jupiter theme we want to bring out of all reciprocal blessing. May our relationship to the plants and to the animals, to the dogs and cats and creatures, may, you know, anything that we are intimate with, may it be a reciprocal blessing, you know, experimental, evolutionary, you know, kahoot. May it be good for everybody. That's the thing. So do you think the plants like shatavari, what would we offer in return? Oh, shatavari, may we sample you? And what would you like from? I mean,
what would you say that you would manifest back for having the shatavari? I would say showing nurturance to those around you, whether they're plants or animals or people. Mm-hmm. Just to get in touch with that nurturance and to put more of it out from yourself. I think that's one of the things that it really speaks to.
And that would be part of the kind of sacramental exchange, going, I take mm-hmm. from you, and in return, I, you know, vow to be, you know, more. It goes well with the antidote to the prickliness. I will show more tenderness and solicitude.
Yeah. And the way I see it too is you're asking the plant, you're meeting it halfway, and so you're saying to the plant and to yourself, okay, I know that I have this quality of nurturance, for example, within me, but shatavari, help me see it within myself a little bit better, and then in return, I will share that outward once I've found it in myself a little bit more strongly.
Hmm. So this is, and we're all stirring the cauldron to conjure the trickster gods of accountability and impeach the Inquisition, ongoing bubbling and liberating cultural hijinks of many kinds, like, whoa, may they be liberating. So all of these things to strengthen ourselves. And I did write, you know, personal and collective be in perpetual synchronous cahoot, separated just by a thin membrane, you know. So as Micah, what I'd been pitching to Micah, and we're in cahoots on this, by dosing ourselves, even just imaginatively this hour, you know, we are dosing the community. So with the plant mushroom allies to support the qualities most necessary for navigating now with aplomb. And I was so happy to, I love that word. It's in our jaunty realm. So put aplomb maybe in magic backpack and jaunty. Assurance springing from confidence in oneself. That's what it means. And it's like, oh, what a good word. Self-possession. And that's what I've been using with QAnon people that I was not so much now untangling with. May we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? And we go, with a plum. So does any plant
and self-possession, yeah, that actually does that self-possession idea, like you always say, you know, don't let them get your goat back, don't take my goat. And as you said, you know, a plum relates to lead, which is the mineral for Saturn, obviously, and that idea of self-possession is also a very, very Saturnine sort of idea. And you know, again, back to the old system we talked about, Pluto and Mars, in the older system, both Capricorn and Aquarius were ruled by Saturn before Uranus kind of entered our awareness. And so in the old system, Capricorn was Saturn giving form, and Aquarius is Saturn breaking form, which is now shuffled off to Aquarius. And a lot of very Saturnine herbs tend to fall into the category that Chinese medicine calls Shen tonics, S-H-E-N.
Oh, yeah.
And Shen is that peaceful strength that resides in your heart. It's like having a well of calm within you that's actually the source of all of the other energies. So it's kind of contradictory, but the other more vibrant energies are held by this quieting, calm, steady energy. And so all the spagyrics, pretty much all the ones that we work with that are Shen tonics, we do as Saturn because of that structural, foundational sort of quality. And, you know, that idea of self-possession, a lot of these Shen tonics are actually minerals, not plants, in particular fossils. you know, because that relates to that idea of the passage of time, where something has died and yet become eternal. That broken form becomes a permanent form, and that's a really Saturn-Uranus kind of idea. And the one that I'm thinking of for self-possession is Dragon Bone, and I think you've worked with that one before. There's some in your here and now that you have right there. And Dragon Bone and Amber are the two that I would kind of put out there right now. So we'll talk about Dragon Bone first. Dragon Bone is actually an extract of fossilized dinosaur bone. And it's a really interesting extract. It makes a beautiful sky blue extraction. It's very pretty. And it's used to hold energy. In Chinese medicine, the way this is explained is that it fixes the Shen. It builds a solid core of energy within you. And so it's really useful for people who are easily swayed by others. So you brought up QAnon. I suppose we could tie it to that. People that are easily swayed by others, and people that are pulled in a million different directions by others. That would be a great remedy for that. And our silly slogan for it that we came up with one day after too many days working in a booth was "Hold your own with Dragon Bone." And just so being self-possessed, hold your own with it, that Saturn holding form kind of quality to it.
Right. Well, no, and so jaunty, I just re-looked up because it's okay. We have a plum and jaunty. Yeah, and a plum from plumb line and associated with lead, as Micah reminded us. Jaunty, elegant, stylish, easy and sprightly in manner. We go, ah. So just to weave these qualities in the astro sky guiding within us all, you know, so self-possession, Saturn. Really, Saturn really running the show. Well, everybody's running the show, but Saturn convening the show really is. We sort of start with that self-possession, which allows then jauntiness and aplomb. They really require a kind of earned, relaxed confidence in self, right? So that's really good. So we have the Saturn guys. So Dragon Bone. Yeah, and as you said, for those easily swayed by others, we put that in the collective brew. I think we should do a customized thing, and then also what we would like to toss into the community.
Yeah, that's sure. A good one for everybody.
That's really good. Yeah, Dragon Bone all around for the entire community of humans. Right, because, you know, the sun will move into Pisces by Thursday, Aquarius handing the baton to Pisces. So we move into the realm of where, as tricksters, aspiring fellow trickster beings, are we most influential? And trickster says, well, trickster is most influential in the realm of collective atmosphere, the dream realm, the collective realm. So we leave the jangly lights and social media and all of the impeachment ritual, which was impressive. I mean, Jamie Raskin was impressive, and I did put his chart in our thing because it's like, oh, several drops of that. But you can see someone dreeing their weird. You know, Pluto exactly opposite his moon in Cancer, so terrible loss of his son and endangerment of his daughter and his son-in-law, which contributed to his son at 21 Sagittarius in the fifth house, his really consummate, masterful, full of feeling, ritual delivery. I mean, he did a fabulous job. And just to see how people are doing that, again, the taking of the deep, deep grief and working it into dedication to collective well-being. And we go, ooh, just a powerful sacrament. So, but we leave the Aquarius realm slowly, slowly in its jangliness and its fractiousness.
We could talk about Uranus first before we do.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm just saying, that's just a preview. Absolutely. Saturn and Uranus. No, Uranus and Saturn are squared all year. It's two more times exactly, now being the first yesterday and today. But yeah, absolutely. Saturn and Uranus want to be wed together, the two co-conveners of Aquarius, of community. How much boundaries, how much improv, how much wolf pack, how much wild coyote blending together. But yeah, Uranus. Whatever you want.
And actually, when you were talking about Jamie Raskin too, that did also remind me a little bit of not the Uranus energy specifically, but the other Shen tonic that I relate to that Uranus energy, which is amber. Amber resin is the fossilized sap of an ancient tree that is exuded, you know, up to many millions of years ago, and it turned into kind of a sort of stone, and it's this interesting in between substance. And it's a lot like a lot of these other tree resins that are exuded in response to a wound, in response to an injury. And a lot of these resins, frankincense, myrrh, amber, are all very much about pain and injury becoming something useful and something beautiful. That's what sprung to mind with Representative Raskin you were talking about.
Yeah.
And with amber in particular, it's another very strong Shen tonic. It's also used in Chinese medicine. And one of the things that it does, so we put dragon bone out there in the collective for the people that are, you know, easily drawn into madness that doesn't help them. This kind of helps you create a sphere around yourself, the amber, of your own energy and no one else's stuff. So very much as the tree did, you know, you were talking about moving with grace. And sometimes to do that, you do need to create this little bubble around yourself of your own energy where it's nobody else's stuff. It's just yours. And that's kind of, I think, relates to how the tree created that as it flowed out of itself. And one of the ways energetically that amber it does this, and one of the understandings of it from Chinese medicine, is that it's electric. It was called electrum by the Greeks. And if you take a chunk of amber and rub wool on it, it'll throw off little sparks. It has that electrical property to it. And so it's used to open energy flow in the meridians. It has this very electric feeling. It kind of moves energy to create a field. So with the dragon bone, that Saturn quality, we had that solid core of protection. This is more an energy field of protection. So it's a lot more of a Uranus quality of protection. And I think that's why you see it very often in old talismanic pieces. This is something we've been playing with a lot lately, too, creating talismanic jewelry from a lot of ancient pieces. And there's so much amber. There's so much amber used in these ancient pieces because of that beautiful, calming, protective energy that it has. And I think that's one of the genius of the Hermetic system, is that you can look at these medicinal, spiritual, talismanic properties of something can all come together and come from the same really interesting place. And I think the amber brings a lot of that together in very beautiful ways.
And that's why it's interesting to see, you know, what do we have on hand? What jewelry, what whatever, in our mind, but also as you're speaking, I have this very interesting, and again, dusting things off. It's a good winter time to do that. So I have a pretty amazing necklace that I got from a friend, Carol Dyer, a master jeweler ally, right when I got divorced. And it's amber held in place by 400-year-old Nepalese hand-woven silver cord with moonstones dropping off of it. So it's quite potent. But it's been in the drawer for years. But I'm gonna go dust it off. Going, hello, you. I mean, it's a powerful.
You should.
It's a powerful piece.
Yeah, because that talismanic work and the spagyric work that we do actually come from the same lineage. So they marry together very, very well. Trisemius was a monk who was the teacher of Agrippa, and that's where we get a lot of the talismanic work that is like the magical squares and so forth. But he was also Paracelsus' teacher, so that's where the spagyric works come with. And so that planetary idea of as above, so below, you know, these minerals and metals have these properties, but these plants have these properties too, and we work with certain timings to bring out those qualities, whether we're making a necklace or a spagyric. It comes from the same root source, and you can kind of step back and connect the two that way.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, everything's alive. And so it was something it took me a long time to pay. It was sort of like a divorce sacrament ritual on my way out, going, oh, there we go. So it was quite pricey. So every now and then when I became, you know, broke or whatever, I thought, I'll sell it. But it wouldn't be sold. So I'm going to go, yes, honor it some more. It's like what, as we weed through things, it's like whatever we choose to keep in our house, let's really love it. And whatever we choose to release out there to give away or to sell, you know, go, oh, there we go. But everything's got a voice going, where do you want to go? You know, and I think it's what we create, you know, where would you like to go? Do you want to, oh, you want to stay here? Okay. So yes, anyway, so I wait.
Yeah, or even putting the old pieces together. Sometimes I'll, you know, this happens with formula making, with our spagyric work. It happens with talisman making too. Sometimes in my head, I think of two things that'll go really well together and I go to combine them and they're both like, nope, that is not what goes together here.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, you do have to let them have a voice. You have to let the plants have a voice through your spagyric work that you're doing and the timings in particular. So, you know, starting the distillation of an herb of moon at sunrise on Monday to really amp that up. Or if you're making a talismanic piece, you're melting the metal at that particular time to let it take form at that particular moment and emphasize your microcosmic efforts with the macrocosmic energies. Like you always say, we have a team, we have cooperators standing by. There's all these other energies and we just have to meet them, you know, maybe not even halfway, just some kind of step to say, I honor what you have to offer, and I'm making an effort to be a vessel for that and to bring that here into the world, whether it's internally by taking a medicine and invoking that into yourself, or externally by making talismans or making altars or doing ritual in your house, whatever you do around yourself to bring that in.
And I love Terry Pratchett's witches call, they in times of crisis, they make shambles. And shambles are whatever you have in your pocket, kind of thing, or lying around, you know, it's a dust ball and some string and a paper clip and a what, anyway. So yeah, it's all magic that way. So we go, that's super great. And then just to weave everything into our brew, you know, our ally Laura is writing a suggestion, because the trickster gods of accountability, the first email, thank you very much, is the RICO Act, right, and which is important. And then her invocation, Laura's invocation, thank you, Laura. May all complicit in the attempt to delay the counting of the electoral votes by Congress be indicted as part of the RICO case underway against several members of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Sure, that sounds good. We can throw that into the impeach the Inquisition. Bubbling thing and racketeering and right. So everything, I mean, it is all related, right? So we do want the trickster gods of accountability, with a kind of, you know, how shall they emerge from the cauldron? How shall they wittily engage the RICO Act, you know, with jaunty aplomb. There we go. Jaunty aplomb. I'm just taken with those. Jaunty aplomb. Okay. And then just divination from what's at hand. So I had the two bottles of here and now, so I guess I really want to be here and now, or I should take more. And then right next to
and
them.
And so you are.
And so I am, right. And the next one next to it is Volcanga, which is also Saturn. Yeah?
It is for sure. That is really, really, really Saturn. Yeah. Volcanga is related to Iboga, which maybe more people have heard of, but Volcanga it's an African plant, and it's used primarily in rituals of passage from childhood to adulthood to help the person undergoing the ritual let go of the stuff of childhood and move into the stuff of adulthood. And it's very much about that energy. It's very much about letting go of what doesn't serve you. Seeing that and letting go of it, whether you want to or not. It's really Saturnine, and it can be a bit of a harsh teacher in that way. But it'll definitely show the things within yourself that aren't working for you and the patterns that you can get caught up in that are, you know, creating more problems for yourself and how to let go of them.
Right. And then in the Botanical Preservation Corps, when they used to send out an actual paper catalog, I remember just reading the descriptions as kind of like us hearing them tonight was really great. And I just remember it said Volcanga African root, given to hunting dogs to sharpen their senses and to older people to increase their hearing and eyesight. I'm like, yes, what a good idea. Even if we just read the description and ate a dust ball, that would be good. So, well, it's interesting because I've always quite loved it. In fact, I just took two drops right now going, Boa Conga. I've forgotten the Iboga connection.
They're related. And the way that Iboga is used, you know, the more famous use of Iboga is in drug treatment to help people. And you do, I mean, you hear these stories about people that go on the Iboga journey and come out of it and are like, oh, my God, I don't know why I was even doing heroin all those years. I see why I was. I see what was missing from me, and I'm okay, and I'm done with that. And they're just done with it. And Boa Conga is similar in that way. The journey with it is much less of a trial. There's not the purging and the wild hallucinations and all of that. And so it's not really a strong enough medicine to quit something as dramatic as a serious drug addiction, but it's really useful for quitting the more subtle things that keep you, you know, unconstructive thought patterns or being stuck in negativity or just relationships with people that you should let go, things like that.
Well, yeah, now we're back to self-possession. Mm-hmm. And the crucial thing, you know, part of the, again, the theme so strong of now that remind us that in our mythological DNA memory, we know there were rituals of initiation from childhood to adulthood, not limited to specific age. You know, at any time is a good time to do that. And that's part of, you know, the 2020 year that we were emerging from and the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, the cauldron of death and rebirth. And we go, and how shall social culture, well, this country, America, but not just this country, because I think we have people not just from this country on this call, emerge, may the maturation, may this country emerge with tolerance and curiosity and ingenious altruism. And, you know, and there's a beautiful thing now, which is, I'll say it and then translate it into our molecules and our cahooting with Micah. So all of last year, 2020, was the death and rebirth cauldron, the cauldron of death and rebirth, and what shall we ladle out? And tonight, this whole time around now, really begins to answer that. What shall we ladle out? Because now Pluto is in a very positive dynamic relationship to Mars in Taurus, to protecting the forest, to protecting beauty. And so here's the initiation, and then I'm happy I brought up the Boa Conga, right, to for ourselves and for others, childhood into adulthood. You know, it's like, you know, in the Eleusinian mysteries, they're definitely tripping on mushrooms. We might get to them. But everyone saw Persephone having gone down a maiden, a puella, returning an initiated queen or medicine woman, we might translate it. And in the same way, you know, the puer, the boy, regardless of age, goes down and returns, you know, the self-possessed green man. So that really works. And this whole week now is about, you know, that quality. Now we return to the many forms of news without which, you know, we, that merely human is not doing it, right? Without the rest of our cooperators who are standing by, you know, we've seen the limits of human capacity with in the ritual with full dedication. I mean, again, the Democrats' presentation of the case was really great, and yet still there was chicanery and corruption and much that will be with us for some time to keep resolving.
And you do kind of wonder why that was all put out there only to go nowhere, but I'm sure it's seeding something that we'll need later, that we can pick up again later.
Right. And also, no, late breaking important news from Kathleen. Wait, the moon is in Aries. That's fire. You're right. I was looking at Thursday's chart. In Thursday's chart, there will be no fire. But you're right. Kathleen reminds us, very important, the moon in Aries, which is also in a beautiful relationship. Here's Mars again. But moon, it's like we have Mars woofiness in Taurus, Venus's sign. Ooh, beauty, Mars. We have Moon in Aries, woof, 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 but very, with a quintile to Saturn. Again, it's the woofy hero or heroine, you know, as agent of society's goodness and order. And so she's quintile Saturn. And she's sextile Mercury stationing. We might come back to this. Stationing goes forward on the 20th. Well, that's why we want to be calm and have, as Tiffany Aiken, the witch, says, not just first thoughts, second thoughts, and third thoughts, even better. It's like pausing, slowing down, slow motion movement, as though we were moving in water on land.
And Moon has a lot of overlap, I think, with Saturn's energy, at least Kabbalistically. They're considered octaves of each other, where they call Moon the bright, fertile mother, and Saturn is the dark, sterile mother. And they both relate to time and to cycles in interesting ways. Whereas, Saturn just relates to the one cycle, like you're born, you get a form, you live your life, you die, you lose your form. It's just the one go around on the ride. Whereas the Moon energy we can draw on for cycles that repeat, right? Because she vanishes every month and then she comes back, and she's the same, but she's different every time. And so a lot of the Moon herbs of dream work and dreaming help us go into that realm and come back out in a way that the Saturn herbs are a little more of a one-way directional kind of trip, which is useful too. But the Moon energy, I think the really dreaming moony herbs like the lotuses and the water lilies let us dip into that realm, take a little bit of something and then come back out and work on it, and then dip back in a little bit and come back out, because there's that cycle that returns to the same place every time that we can seed a little bit, work a little bit, seed a little bit, work a little bit.
Right. Once again, we have a humming, repetitive theme in our guiding astro mythology, plants, everything, because the Moon is in Aries, which is rah, 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 usually, but that particular degree, in what way are we most effectively rah, rah, rah? Its image is a hammock stretched between two trees. Organizing one's options, finding one's own rhythm. There we go. Kind of guiding us even back to Saturn too, pausing for renewal, balancing activity and rest, the woofy Mars is in the beautiful, sensual, pleasure Taurus realm, the Moon very woofy in Aries, but in the like hammock, a hammock is a good way. And so the Moon is really carrying the February 11th fantabulous new moon, six planets in Aquarius, setting the template for the next 20 years, into Aries. And it does quintile Saturn. That woofy advocacy for life emerges in each of us, each of our unique experimental selves, to participate in community in our own customized fashion. I mean, from the closet, from the anything dedicated will work. And I think Uranus chimes in and says, we are always, like I have Uranus chime in saying, we are big gods. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice. And then whatever you do is going to fly, right? So the freedom choice dynamic and hammocks are highly recommended. So that's adorable. And then, so the Moon and dreaming, Mars is connected to dreaming, which is wonderful. And I did notice that I had in my lineup of so many bottles here, some I want to ask you about. Oh, I have the Selene, right?
There you go. Yeah, perfect. The Jyotsha dream plant. That is a very, very beautiful dreaming herb. It's an African plant. It's used by the Kong people. The Kong and the San people of South Africa. And it's associated with ancestor worship. In our culture, black is the color of death and ancestors, but in most other cultures, it's white. And Selene roots, when you prepare them, create a white extraction. And so that's considered to be a signature of them being for the ancestors. And white is really important when you work with Selene. I tell a story on our blog when we were first working with the plant. Whenever we work with any new plant, Paul and I will both chew on some of it every day for like 2 weeks before we do anything with it so we can get to know what it is. And I got up one morning and there's this gorgeous bouquet of white flowers on the table. And I was like, wow, this is gorgeous. Thank you so much. And Paul's like, well, you said I had to get them for you. I'm like, no, I've like never demanded flowers. That's not me. And he had had a dream that was so vivid of needing to give me white flowers that he woke up convinced it was real and went right to the store. And that's one of the Selene things. So like the idea I said of dipping into that moon realm, grabbing something and bringing it back out. Selene makes your dream work so real that it's very, very easy to bring solutions from that realm into the practical realm of everyday life. And often white will be the signature of that. So if you work with that plant when you're dreaming, watch for something white. And that will often be the signature of what you need to pay attention to in that dream. I've had friends report, you know, there's a white cat or a white dog or a man all dressed in white, things like that. And that's considered traditionally with the people this plant comes from to be the ancestor coming to you and guiding you through your dream work.
And then again, there's so many cooperators standing by. There's so much plant intelligence that, because when you're, I also, somewhere I have a dusty bottle of Calea Zapoteca. Is that right?
Zacata Chichi. It's so much fun to say. Zacata Chichi. It means bitter grass, and it is, as you know, if you've tasted it.
Well, it's also an amazing lucid dream plant.
It is.
Right.
Because
I did only take it once, but I'm going to dust it off as well. I still have it. I might as well use it or give it away. But it was what you said reminded me of it, because it was where you have a dream where you dream that you've woken up, but you haven't.
Oh, I know. Calea does that, doesn't it? And you'll have like 20 different, it's like Inception. You have like 20 different layers of it. Yeah, it's crazy that way. And it won't be a very restful night with the Calea. Calea is a Mazatec herb. So from the people who brought us Salvia divinorum, psilocybin mushrooms, we love these people. Thank you for all your gifts to humanity. Calea will drop you very rapidly into REM state, and then you'll wake up as soon as you're, I was going to say out of REM state, but sometimes you're not entirely out of it when you wake up. But anyway, if you have trouble remembering your dreams, Calea is a really good one for that, because often we dream and then we just keep sleeping for several hours afterwards and kind of lose the thread of it. But Calea is excellent for bringing you in and out of that state. But it can also be very multi-layered and very, very confusing and hard to untangle afterwards.
Ah, maybe that's why I didn't take it again. But it was like, that was very interesting. We'll file that away. But then you also
You also
mentioned Salvia divinorum. I used to have a wonderful Salvia divinorum plant. It's a mint family, mm-hmm. right? So and it's
yeah,
it's,
it is. She's hard legal. To grow.
It's legal. Well, it lasted for quite a while, but now I have the tincture somewhere here. Oh, right here. There it is in my hand. What I'm looking for is right in front of me. And Salvia is very interesting because we're talking about, you know, the dream imaginative world into the tangible world, and that's quite available. We're participating in dreaming, you know, our bodies dreaming the world into being. That's quite available now. And Salvia's super intriguing. And I've a couple of times when there's a price often for the psychoactive plants, which is to really do Salvia, you can smoke it, or which is we all did in the Botanical Preservation Corps retreat with Terence McKenna in the rainforest of Mexico so long ago. And it's one of those things where, you know, if there's too much light or sound, it's flat. But it was one of the later chewing it, you chew a giant quid in your mouth, right? And it's very alkali. So that's the kind of price, the entrance you pay. But then it was absolutely the most desirable, interesting experience of, you know, just subtly leaning to the right and becoming a hawk flying over a valley. And it was like, oh, this is really good. And then in the distance, you can hear part of the gathering, you know, the guys going, oh, I'm not getting off. Are you getting off? I hope I got enough to get off. And then it's flat and it's like, no, you know, and through the jungle, you can hear that. But just the actual, like the white color, you know, in the rainforest when we were all smoking a little salvia, and it was very soothing. We'd all physically soothing. Again, these dream things that have an effect. Many of us had been eaten alive by chiggers after a fantastic illness and whatever. And all the bug bites went flat. You know, no longer whatever. They came back after the salvia, but they went flat. And
that
my,
makes sense because traditionally, salvia is the herb that's the first herb that the shamans in training take in the Mazatec, the traditional culture. And the idea is that salvia is a gardener, and she tends you like she's one of her plants, and she takes you to what they call the Tree of Heaven, which has all of the other remedies on it that you need to learn.
Yeah,
so she's kind of like the teacher plant of all the other healing plants.
And
that's where she takes you to learn all the other ones.
And my traveling companion was Dr. John Aaron's dad. And the morning after, he said, I won't use his expletive, whatever, but he goes, the Virgin Mary came and effed me. I'm like, really? You win. That's amazing. And then we were in town in real life, and I bought a little Mexican box with, a little statuette of the Virgin Mary, whatever. And I turned it around because it had a different version of her on the other side. And he goes, she was wearing that. That was her. Anyway, so these are mysteries, especially remember, Sylvia reminding us that the quintiles open portals between worlds. And what we're talking about also is a lot of the plants that you've been referencing, we're opening doors for between dream world and molecular world. And why I'm just increasingly taken with my phrasing of the thing, it's like the trickster gods go, oh, you humans, you provide the metaphors, we'll provide the molecules. And Mars and Taurus to Neptune really says, you provide the Neptune dream template, we'll provide the molecules of animation to make it real. So it's that's why where we started off, it's good to, right, in a sense, to start with the Devil's Club going, well, defended, protect the forest, get over there, and then, clear out the neighborhood of bad influences, right? Then open the doors, right? So there's a kind of...
Yeah, and then, the metaphors and the molecules, all of these different planetary energies that you work with as stories and characters in the astrological work that I work with is represented in the molecules of the plants. Each one of them has its own, negative and positive states and a eudaimonia, through the middle of it. Each one of them has things to teach. Saturn can be Volaconga, makes you cranky, but it also helps you see what doesn't serve you. Moon can be too intoxicating, but also beautiful dream work. And each one of those kind of has a balanced quality to it. And I want to put out a little invitation to everybody listening. If this is interesting to you, working with these planetary energies and understanding them a little bit better in light of the spagyric work, we took one of our classes that we offered many years ago, Know Thyself is called, and we made it into a free email series of lessons that you can sign up for if you want to. And I posted a link to that in the Facebook group for the council. Mm. So you can join our group and then see the post for that. But if it's interesting to you, because it's based on that course, so we go through a lot of we have a whole lesson on Kabbalah where we talk about the different planetary energies and how each one manifests. And it's very complementary to your astrological studies, but it's a little bit different than that too. So if anybody's interested, I invite you to join us there again through the link in the Facebook council group.
Well, it's great. There really is a renaissance rising. I mean, you who know so much, and that's such a generous proffering, and everybody who brought what, and it's in accord with the harmony of our chart tonight, the moon quintile Saturn, and then Saturn exactly trines our ascendant, that our cultural contributions are well met, and that all human, personal, and societal malaise find their solution in the mind of nature, Uranus and Taurus, eager to converse. And we go, right, because what you're describing, these relationships that you have with the plants and that you guide us to into relatedness with them, it's a conversation, right? Like when you eat the plant for however long you said with Paul, before you do anything with it, you get to know it. What's manners, right? It's manners.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is, and it's like we were talking about with the Shatavari. It's the first step of asking the plant, what do you want me to know about you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need the people that I work with to know about you? And how can I get that from the form you're in now to this other form that I'm making? How can I carry that through? And what does the plant show me in working with it raw? And what does that feel like when it's in my distillation and I'm sitting in front of it? Do I still feel that connection to what it was like raw, or do I not? And what is that also like when it's done? And I take the final spagyric. Have I honored what it said to me as a raw plant and magnified that in some way that can then translate to what other people might get out of it?
Right.
And then, I think of all the plants we work with, I think salvia is the one that has the strongest intelligence to mirror whatever you're bringing to the experience. She's always been one of the most opinionated of the plants.
Because there's some people like Andy Wilde, Dr. Andrew Wilde, is like, oh, it's a nasty plant. And I go, I've seen it be strict with men who had slightly bad manners. I've seen that. I have seen that.
I learned more about nature and plants and how it all works, all the beautiful vision of it from salvia than from anything else. But I've also seen her just kick people's butts. I mean, we did an event a while ago at a college many, many years ago, and our sample bottles often go missing at events and whatever it happens. But a couple of weeks after the conference, I got two of our salvia sample bottles in the mail, and they were our sample bottles. They were not ones I sold, so I know they were stolen. And there was just this note saying, please accept these back. Salvia has shown me how wrong it was to take them. And but that's what she can be like. And I was like, and I will always wonder what she showed that person, you know, and I hope they learned from it. But she's a very opinionated plant.
Yeah. Right. Well, and then there's also a physical thing, because pretty much everyone also had the same experience of iridescent white sparkly light descending around us and healing our skin. But it was
beautiful.
White and iridescent, right? So it's like, ooh, shimmering.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery of these things, you know, like with the psychoactive plants and all, it's like, for me, that increase perception of reality, I think, in a multidimensional way, and increase the capacity to perceive patterns of kinship going, and so when you said Vilakanga can make people grumpy, I don't know, maybe I'm just intrinsically grumpy, so it doesn't make me grumpy, because it is a pattern perceiving thing, right? Isn't that what you think?
It definitely shows you patterns. Yeah, I mean, one of the strongest experiences I had with it was back in the Bush days. Remember that evil president? We've been at this for some time now, and I was watching something on TV that triggered this sort of fear feeling. And then I just saw how that all came together. I just saw how I could be fearful and then it would affect my body. And then I could like see out into the future how that would affect what I said to the next person I interacted with. And from there and from there and from there and from there. And so showing the patterns, and sometimes the patterns it shows you are not beautiful and not useful. And sometimes they might be things you're a little bit attached to. But it shows you how you need to let go of them. And so if you can go with that, if you're okay with that energy, then it's fine. But if you struggle, it will be a little bit of a fight. And I think maybe the crankiness can come from that, from struggling against it.
Right. Well, that's an interesting thing, because, we were talking about backstage, and I don't know if Evangeline's on our call. Hi there. But she kindly cahooted me into a course with Matthew Wood and I've forgotten her name. But it's full of knowledge. And again, part of this Renaissance, it's herbalism and astrology. But it is also very old style teaching, which is, you know, if this, then here's this bad thing. But then here's the herb that will help it. But it's just a nuance of, as opposed to how shall we cooperate with it? Just always going back to the word disaster means against the stars. When we pit our small will and our instinctive wise self against the pulse, you know, of creation going, and consider, means con with sitter the stars. Consider is the antidote. We avert disaster by gathering to consider, and always how shall we cooperate with it? And the questions asked at the Delphic Oracle, are our plans in accord with the gods? Are they in accord with the larger pulse? And if not, what should we do to come into accord. So just the slight switching, that's why I love Marsilio Ficino, the slight switching into collaborative guidance, and then, oh, and oops, if we don't do that, then here's the remedy back into the collaboration. But kind of going with what does that want? So, yeah, I just wanted to put that there. So,
And rather than seeing things as like a disaster or a calamity, just be like, oh, made a little misstep there. Thank you for putting me back on the path.
Yes, right. Yeah, well, exactly. And the Volokanga Iboga, which is what in Black Panther, the hero takes, it's purple, right? But it's clearly a kind of Iboga thing. He drinks this root, which takes him to the realm of the ancestors to speak with his father. And that's why, you know, Iboga was given to leaders as part of their inauguration, so that they would go to the spirit world, so that they would realize their own flaws. And as a sacrament, it is about seeing deeply with a calm clarity, going, ah, that's how it is. Not, you know, it's also was given to people thinking of divorce and stuff, you know, just because you just see things clearly, like, without reactivity, but going, ah. And again, it's quite physical. We do see real things. I was seeing a very troubled person at the time, and in the vision, I saw him just holding his left eye, like, whoa. And when I emerged into real life, I ran into him, and he's like, oh, my left eye has been troubling me. And I made him go to the hospital, and later he thanked me because he said I saved his eye. We are seeing real things, you know, this imaginary, the light, the connectivity, the shimmering thing, the diagnosis. So the Iboga or the Volokanga, and then even us just speaking about it, it's in us, right? All these things in a sense are endogenous by the planetary quality. When we think of Saturn, our self-possession, it taps us into all the Saturn plants that Micah's invoking, like Volokanga, and the qualities, the capacity to see things and diagnose things clearly without melodrama, just,
And I think the Volokanga reminds me too of it has a really strong crone energy, and we do a formula called divine feminine, and Volokanga plays the role of crone in that. And it reminds me of some of the older relatives of my youth, these women that loved you so much they wouldn't sugarcoat anything. You know, if you've ever had like an older relative who just tells it like it is, but nobody faults her for it because you know it's coming from this place of just amazing love for you, that's kind of the energy that it has.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, I did have a fairy godmother who was quite like that. Daunting.
Yeah. And there's clarity. Yeah, there's clarity to it and there's love to it, but it's not pretty.
No, she would say, like, when I went to New York and I had some, you know, badly organized gig, she just said, well, and this was when she was 94, she goes, well, it'll be a real rat fuck, but you'll get through it. Anyway, so, yeah, there was an Aquarius crone who didn't care.
Mine was my Irish grandmother, and if you whined about wanting anything, she would say, yeah, and people in hell want ice water.
And people what?
People in hell want ice water. And you'd be like, okay. And she'd say that to you whenever you were whining about wanting something you didn't really need.
Oh, that is tough. Right. Yeah. So there's that. So, yeah. And then also, because I read the description so long ago and now you're putting it together for me, that, you know, Volokanga given, you know, to hunting dogs and to older people to sharpen their senses. And one of the qualities of the Iboga experience, which is the mother of all psychedelics, but when you begin to emerge from the having gone to the center of all stories and incredible visuals, more real than anything we're seeing in front of us, and it's like, and then it slowly calms down, and then you can feel something, a wise intelligence, kind of like a dolphin, scanning your body, checking things out, going, And then when you emerge a little further, my hearing was incredible. It was like you know, it didn't last, but it was like wolf hearing. It's like I could hear a mouse rustling, you know, 30 feet away, like, ooh. So so it really did sharpen senses. And then
and perception.
Hmm?
Perception, you know, on a very deep level.
Yes. And then just to touch over briefly to poisons, a friend of mine was bitten by a baby rattlesnake, even more potent than a mature one. And he had to calm his friends down. They drove him to the hospital and he was doing deep breathing. And he asked the doctor, he said, "Doctor, I'd like to ride this out. Let's not give me the antidote." The doctor was like, "Well, okay, we'll keep checking on you." But he said it was unbelievably psychedelic. I mean, painful, right? But, you know, the hearing through the walls, you know, for hundreds of feet, you know, just incredible hearing. And then it was in him and he just had, you know, snake dreams and everything too. But the actual increase of perception, and we go, "Well, okay, there's a little bit of poison thing, the iboga, the rattlesnake venom, the whatever." Well, and many of the
shamanic herbs that are very strongly ruled by Saturn are the ones that drift into poisonous. A lot of the old world initiatics, so, you know, the mandrake, all those nightshades, the mandrake, the henbane, the belladonna, those are all very Saturnine ones. And those are kind of a different category than, you know, mushrooms and things like that. They tend to be really dissociative. And again, it's like that journey down and out. There are ones that might dissociate you so well that you don't come back from that experience. And that's kind of a signature, I think, of the Saturn hallucinogens versus the lunar ones that will take you there, but also reliably bring you back.
Right. Good. Well, here's just a lovely thing from AJ. "Hi, Caroline. Hi, Micah. You two always weave such fabulous counsels." Oh, good. I dine so well at the table. I just love them. That's wonderful, right? So we're as we draw to a close, we're just putting the tinctures that spoke to you in our imaginary drink here. There was a thing. And also where we were just now too, you know, the common saying, the difference between, you know, poison and tonic is dosage, right? So there's also that quality going, little micro, maybe not a full rattlesnake bite, but just a little then we're into the homeopathy. But and then just maybe just to come back around, you know, I have in front of me rose. So
yes, that will take us to a whole other more flowery, more comfortable sort of realm. So rose, yeah, rose is kind of the archetype of love, isn't it? You have the magistry there, probably?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, rose, Venus. It's just the herb of love. And it's a remarkably powerful healing herb, too. She's very, very gentle and pleasant, you know, so it's not that whole, like, things have to be nasty to heal you. She's a really strong antiviral, antibacterial. Also, but just a very heart-centered plant, you know, just that expression of love and the love of all the levels of it, the love of divine, the love of your partner, the love for your pets, the love for the rest of humanity, which, you know, some days is more aspirational than real, but we all hope to get there. And the rose is just lovely for that. I think it just really embodies that heart-centered quality of being.
And then before we depart, maybe we honor Mercury stationing. It'll go direct on the 20th, right? But it's slowing way down, which is why I think it's good for us, you know, second thoughts, third thoughts, going, wait for it. Things might take a little longer for some reason. There we go. Okay. So is there I have magistry of Mercury, fennel. Is that a good Mercury thing?
That's
for
what
us?
I was just going to say. So that must be the right answer.
Oh, good. What would fennel like to say to us through you?
So fennel is chewed traditionally. Fennel seeds, if you go out for Indian food, it's a nice bowl of fennel seeds on the way out.
Yeah.
Back when the before times when we went to restaurants. Right. And fennel sweetens the breath, and magically it sweetens your speech.
And
so fennel is used magically so that your communications will be sweet and pleasant, not, you know, not BS. So we can still speak the truth, but we can do it in a way that is pleasant and graceful and kind and sweet. And it also protects you from the malicious speech of others too.
Ooh,
by that kind
Ooh,
of transitive property.
Yeah.
So fennel for communication that is pleasant and beautiful.
And then I love
both ways.
I love also a Middle Eastern custom of not only putting cardamom in one's really good strong coffee, but just sucking on a cardamom seed all day. It's a wonderful breath thing.
I know. I love chewing on cardamom. It's so delicious. It makes me hungry, but it's so delicious.
So delicious. So cardamom is part of our brew. So excellent. Well, good team. If anybody wants to speak, *7, that would be the time.
And also, I go through on our website whenever we do these talks for folks, because I know we go kind of fast. So if you want to look later and see all the things that I've either tagged or kind of collected that are subjects, not just from tonight, but all of our other cahoots. So website, al-kemi.com/coyote.
Oh, cool. Super cool.
So alchemy.com/coyote. And that'll be articles of things that we've touched on, so you don't have to memorize everything that we just said.
Right. And then also where I can find out more of Shatavari.
Yes, I will make sure to tag an article about Shatavari. I didn't know we'd be talking about it. She just jumped out at me. So we'll tag her too so that she will come up.
Right. So excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you, Micah. Thank you, council team.
Thank you.
Be replenished. And so just for the fun of it, you know, if you have a cup or an imaginary cup, you know, we might just drink all that we've poured in here now, a little toast. Mm-hmm. And then we have our outro is from Land of Fire. It's a very fun, it's good. And so this is our toasting, dancing a little jig, imbibing all these qualities that we've invoked. If you remember them, that's great. And if you don't, just whatever I need, come on into my body. And here we go. Let's, Richard will play this great, fun Land of Fire, our music. Thank you.